Everybody, welcome back to Disc Coverers, the only podcast online that reads reviews and ranks every single one of Sir Terry Pratchett's seminal series of comic fantasy novels, The Disc World. I'm your host, Iris J. Pronouns are she or zare, and with me are my illustrious co-hosts, Belina, then Grace, then June. Why don't you introduce yourselves?
I am still Belina. Pronouns remain she slash they slash CB. I am, as always, just happy to be here.
I am the internet's beloved Princess Grace. She, her, fey, fear, fair, if you're spicy. And with me this week, special treat in person, it's June.
Help! I've been kidnapped! Grace won't let me go! Oh god!
Oh no!
No, I'm kidding. Hi, I'm Juniper. She, her. I am staying with Grace right now, and it's great. Grace is fantastic and wonderful.
Damn,
good to see her.
I'm a gracious as hell host.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Horst.
Hooray.
I'm a gracious horst.
I got to listen to Grace record her other podcast the other day from downstairs and just trying not to cackle loudly as she talks about My Little Pony things.
Oh, I'm flattered.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, listen to We Got Hit by a Horse Truck and Wound Up in Equestria. It started to really pop off recently. Little cross promotion there for you. But yeah,
we just finished season two. We have our big lore reveal that maybe I shouldn't tell you it's a reveal, but there you go.
Yeah, it's an exciting part of the podcast experience that you too can enjoy. Today, though, we're looking at a very unusual entry in the Discworld canon, The Last Hero, put out in 2021. It's advertised on the cover as a Discworld fable. I don't know about that. It is very thoroughly illustrated by Paul Kidby, who's kind of the second house artist for the Discworld series after Josh Kirby. I have to really concentrate so I don't say Jack Kirby. You have to understand. You must understand.
I thought they were the same guy for a long time. I'll admit that.
No. I would love to see Jack Kirby. Yeah. I would love to see Jack Kirby draw Discworld, like, with some, like, New Gods shit going on, but that's not what we got.
Oh, that isn't what we got here either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll draw fan art of that. Yo, fan art call out. But yeah, no, this is a really more of a short story combined with a lot of drawings and illustrations.
I said that this felt like a Discworld OVA. It's only vaguely canon. It's got all of the characters showing up at once for no good reason, just to have them all there so you can point and go, look, it's that guy. It's like
distinctly higher budget, which is weird to say for a novel.
Distinctly higher budget. It goes really fast. The plot doesn't really work. It's mostly an excuse to get to some bits, and it's mostly never going to be referenced again, although it probably happened.
Maybe.
It feels like a weird anime OVA.
It is the last time we see our boy Rincewind, ever.
Thank fuck.
Which is
funny. That's not true.
God damn it. No, you're right. He comes up very briefly later.
Fuck me. Well, it's the last book centered around Rincewind. And I know it's not technically centered around Rincewind, but the copy I have has his big old Home Alone-ass looking fucking face screaming out from the front of the cover. So that's how they advertise this book. Ergo, it is a Rincewind book.
I actually didn't mind him in this. Like, he's... doesn't do that much, and when he does, he's, like, actually kind of funny. It helps that there's, like, five other main characters for him to share the spotlight with.
It kind of helps that there's actually an endless... he's actually right all the time, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Like, the way that he's acting is, unfortunately, eminently reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We who are about to die don't want to. Yeah,
very
no,
quick errata. It was 2001. You said 2021. Just so that you don't have to go edit.
Did I say 2021? I'm so
sorry.
You
absolutely did.
Yeah.
That would be very, very weird.
Wait,
it's
so,
very funny.
So this book is a 2001 Space Odyssey?
Oh, god damn it, it is.
Is that why he did this?
Is that why they go
to space in this one?
That just hit me. Fuck.
I thought it was an Apollo 13 riff, but you know, that's probably...
I mean, it is. It definitely is an Apollo 13 bit, but did he write this book in 2001 specifically because of the bit? If he did,
he's played
us all for fools. Goddamn.
Have simply played us all for rubes. Anyways, before we get too deep into it, why don't we get into the synopsis from our expert Synoptrix. Belina, whenever you're prepared, feel free to blast off.
Give me an easy one this time.
Yeah, no. I'm going to be honest. I don't even have this one written. This is just coming off of the dome. Cohan the Barbarian, along with what's left of his Silver Horde, R.I.P. Old Vincent, having grown sick and tired of life as the Emperors of Agadia, and angry at the way that life itself works, are heading out for one last adventure. They're going to undo the first hero's great deed, and that means returning fire to the gods. They decide to do this by way of taking a magical equivalent of a nuclear bomb to Cori Celestia, the home of the gods. Unfortunately, they don't realize that using a magical bomb in a place of incredibly high magic will kill everybody on the Discworld, as well as the Discworld itself, so... As soon as word of this gets out, Ankh-Morpork scrambles all of its best and brightest to deal with the problem. This involves inventing the space program over the space of a couple of days by getting Leonard of Quirm to do it after the Unseen University completely fails to. They are going to slingshot a giant wooden bird around the disc, sort of like the first book, only it's actually going to work this time, in an Apollo 13 riff. Rincewind is there, as is Carrot, not for any good reason, they just kind of are. The librarian is later discovered because we realize that he's been missing from the last couple of books. After a quick detour to the moon to restock on fuel and nearly blow up the moon itself, they land at Cori Celestia, sort of inadvertently fix the problem by pointing out to Cohen that he's not going to actually be able to hear heroic stories about his great epic adventure because everyone will be fucking dead. So they run the bomb off the mountain to fix the problem that they themselves caused. Everyone goes home. That's it.
Love wins.
If it sounds like an anticlimax, wins. That's because it is.
Yeah. The entire climax is 2 pages and most of it's pictures.
Like, We've talked a lot with Discworld books about how sometimes Pratchett will be like writing one plot and then writing a second plot, and sometimes they connect really well, and sometimes they just kind of vaguely happen at the same time. And this might be the most happening at the same time it's ever been. Ostensibly one causes the other, but the only interaction they have, aside from going, we gotta build a rocket because of Cohen, and then... The only other interaction is at the very end when they show up at the mountain and Rincewind goes, that'll blow up the world. And Cohen goes, ah, fuck, and dives off the mountain with a bomb. Like, it is literally that short. It's so weird.
I honestly kind of forgot that's why they were doing the space program. I thought it had some other reason.
We sent our favorite cowardly guy out here just so he could go, hey, man, come on. Come on.
The entire B plot could have been completely axed if the minstrel had said, "Wait a second! If we do this, how is anyone going to tell the story?"
Yeah,
could have axed the entire B plot for that. But then we wouldn't have gotten all of this art.
And you know what's weird? This book didn't have any coherent plot. It was just kind of thing that happened, and I actually enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I did actually like this book.
Yeah, by the end of it, I was charmed. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
It was a lot better than I remembered. It just didn't have anything that we're used to now. We've been reading the good shit. Well, you give us something that's merely great, and we go, oh, well, that's nice. What's for dinner?
It's weird.
Yeah, it was a bit of a snack more than a full meal of Discworld proportions.
They do start dungeon meshing. Cohen and his friends do, like, spend a good chunk of the book eating monsters.
Yes, and talking about how monsters eat. I want to talk about my favorite part of this book, which as a cartoonist, predictably, it is the pictures. But more specifically, all of the little diagrams that Leonard of Quirm makes of his rocket ship, the kite, and the various species of swamp dragon and moon dragons and different other imaginary species that he's coming up with, and like all this other stuff, how mechanical bits work. I love that shit here. Like, oh my god, there's so many weird little notes. Like, they have one page that's just devoted to him, like Rincewind, Carrot, and Leonard himself all wear different spacesuits, and you can see, like Rincewind's in the Mark 1, Carrot's in the Mark 2, and Leonard gets the Mark 3, and like, he's explaining how he iterates each design as he kind of figures out what exactly a spacesuit built using fantasy medieval technology could be and what its needs would be. And it's really cute. I just love, like, you could just have the whole book be shit like that. Like, just little maps and diagrams and detailed anatomical drawings of creatures, and I would just be over the moon about that.
I mean, good news, they did make that.
Yeah, there's a ton of that, and it's awesome. I really loved that. I loved a lot of the other art too, just all of the little like bits, even like the weird art of Cohen, and it just kept, because there's a large portion of the art in this book is just, hey, look at this weird old man.
Yeah.
Isn't he weird?
Look at this character. Look at this guy. Like, there's a whole bit where it's, the Silver Horde is like, there's admittedly a pretty good bit where they run into Evil Henry or whatever it is, and there's a lot of
Mad
like,
Lord Harry.
Yeah, and there's a lot of like evil overlords. Like, you're like, well, you know, you gotta have the incompetent henchmen, and you know, well, of course I would betray you. Yeah. You know. But there's a whole thing where like, oh, yes, and these are my, like, several incompetent henchmen, and we describe all of them, and we get pictures of all of them, and they're dead the next time we see them.
Yep. Yeah, but, I mean, you do get to see them. You don't have to use...
Yeah,
I mean,
and, like...
A cynical person would say, oh, it's so you don't have to use your imagination. Somebody who actually enjoys art, like myself, would say that Paul Kidby draws trolls better than I've seen anybody draw a fucking troll. Mm-hmm. They have a That's Me in particular, one of my favorite illustrations. Mm-hmm. And like trolls are kind of described nebulously in Discworld. It's like, well, they're made of rocks and they have diamonds for teeth and they're big kind of rocky looking guys. But you could be forgiven for assuming that because they interact with human society, they're basically people sized and shaped. They're maybe bigger, but they're not too far off. They're like orcs, but a little more, you know, craggly. Like, the troll here is like the size of a small country and is like just pretty much a sheer cliff face with like skulls hanging off of it. It's holding basically the bottom end of a tree trunk with like chains wrapped around it for a club. It's so sick. I love that.
I appreciate that he's the same size and shape as the page.
Yes.
Dude also, just completely fills it.
I love the fucking lizard men. They're these creepy little shitheads who are all named Slime because they can't remember any other name. I really also love how many weird little guys are in this book. Like, all of the swamp dragons are my favorite. They're all my precious little meow meows, and I love them, and I would die for them. Also, the moon dragons are good, too. They have a little drawing of, like, little baby moon dragons with their little bug eyes and stuff, and... Oh, man. So cute.
They describe this a little bit in the L-Space annotations, but, like, you really get the sense that Pratchett and Kidby just sat down and, like... Okay, we're gonna do... This one's illustrated, so we get to do all the set pieces. We get to do all the little guys. We get to, like, come up with all this shit.
Yeah.
They, like, specifically describe sitting down together and, like... figure out what the spaceship would have to look like if it's going to be a bird and also full of eggs or whatever.
This book feels more than anything like the result of Pratchett and Kidby just coming up with a bunch of bits.
Yeah.
I could easily believe that stage happened before the story.
Annotations point out that they actually built a model of the ship.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's cool.
And they kind of realized most of the way through that, huh, when we actually had to physically build it, it kind of had to be shaped like this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just great. That's beautiful.
You love
that's
to see
so
it.
Cool.
It's fun. I like this book. I actually liked a lot of the jokes. Mm. Even Rincewind. Like, I liked Rincewind's jokes. I really liked the joke of we who are about to die don't want to. Mm-hmm. That's a legitimately solid bit. He was kind of funny. He didn't need to be here.
Yeah,
he's completely pointless.
There's a whole bit where, like, they weren't even considering him, but he shows up and is like, well, I'm gonna get pressed into service anyways. I might as well not volunteer so you can make me do it anyways.
Mm. He already knows the shape of the narrative at this point. Really, like a lot of this book is kind of about the shape of narratives and people trying to, essentially, like, striving to hit their cues in this production as well as they possibly can. There wasn't any sort of big upset to fate. Well, I mean, yeah, but like, even though Cohen was railing against the gods, like, he had to do it in the most heroic possible way, and made a big deal about, like, oh yeah, we're doing things the old school way. Things aren't like they used to, you know. Making a big deal about Dark Lord Harry being a proper sort of Dark Lord and mm-hmm. trying to, like, really storm in and go out in a blaze of glory and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Making sure it's written down properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. It actually, there's parts of it that actually were kind of affecting. Like, mm-hmm. okay, I have such problems with Cohen as a character. Pratchett cannot decide what to do with him, and he just keeps bouncing back and forth between, like, a really funny bit and, like, a bit that's not working and being serious and then being a joke. And it really, it's strange. But there were moments where I was like, oh, this is actually kind of meaningful. Like, the parts where you could tell that he's really struggling with the fact that, like, he's gonna die and it's gonna be pointless and he wants it to be important for some reason. Like, there's a little bit of meaning there. You can find stuff there. It's interspersed between jokes about rampaging hordes of barbarians that are annoying, but, like, there's some really nice stuff there.
It's a lot of it is just, like, the only good parts of Interesting Times, because it's the same thing he was struggling with there. He was trying to deal with legacy and, like, well, okay, what do we do now? And this was him just railing against the sheer unfairness of the fact that, like, his kind of, like, heroes and villains, this is just isn't happening anymore. Mm-hmm. Shit's complicated, yo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which also, I guess, on a more metatextual level, you could read as with Cohen being in this book talking about legacy and talking about trying to do right by old stories, and with Rincewind also leading the other plot, you could really also read this as kind of like Terry in his Bangers era essentially trying to write an older Terry style, like an earlier Terry style story.
Yeah.
Something that's a little more of a road trip, that's lighter on nuance and complexity. You know what I mean?
And, no, I get you.
Yeah. And it's like, that's, I don't know. It does feel weird coming right off of Thief of Time, which is such a wild fucking book.
Cohen and Rincewind were, you know, they were originally made for the weird, lighthearted fantasy parody, and they're just kind of stuck living in this world that's suddenly actually getting relevant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, the fact that at least one of them is going, you know, this kind of sucks, does have something to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, like, I feel like it does, in a weird way, half come together at the end. Like, the ending of Cohen is such a stupid anticlimax, with them being like, the world's gonna blow up, well, off the edge, and dive off the side of the mountain for no reason.
Yeah,
like,
they never found the body, and then, of course, you know, they decide not to die, and then they keep going, they steal some Valkyrie horses.
It's very confusing, and kind of an anticlimax, but the scene with, like, the bard, like, being obsessed with this story, and that's actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then the scene where it's revealed that what they decided to do at the very end was go find the guy who stole fire from the gods, shake his hand, give him a drink, give him a sword, and let him finally take revenge on those stupid birds.
That was
that
so good.
That's like a great bit. It's that perfect mix of, like, Pratchett, like, meaningful but also really stupid. Mm-hmm. It was perfect. It's weird. There's a lot of really great ideas in this book, and they sometimes come together.
Was he named Mazda after the car? Like, what's the joke there?
I was wondering that.
Good question. I
was
don't
there a
know.
Car called the Prometheus?
Zoom zoom. I thought that there were some things about the Cohen plotline that leave a little bit more to be desired. I think that the minstrel was really just kind of a carbon copy of Vincent's whole storyline, except Vincent, like, ate it off screen in between Interesting Times and now, I guess, to just clear the board between that book and this one, which, good.
You needed someone to go through the exact same arc again.
Yeah. He does get a cool painting of himself at the end.
It's just better this time.
Yeah. Doesn't get a name, doesn't really get a lot of character development. She's just kind of there. Also, we have a female barbarian here, Vera, the Raven-haired.
Yeah, the girl boss.
Who is the only girl. and doesn't really do much.
She kind of mostly exists to go, hey, ladies could be barbarians too. Yeah. Isn't she cool? Well, and I'm like, yeah, she's cool. And then Pratchett's like, she's cool. Anyways, back to Thor. She's cool.
Terry has to have at least one, like, girl boss in his books, and Lady Sybil isn't in this one. She gets mentioned, like, her dragon sanctuary gets mentioned. That's where they get the dragons to fly the rocket ship.
Yeah, but, like, it's also an excerpt with the list of the varieties in there.
Yeah. But since Sybil isn't in this book, he has to invent a new girl boss, and I'm glad he did. You love to see it.
Yeah, you get some weird Xena XP.
He has to respect women a little bit. Happy International Women's Day, everypony.
Yeah, I think they could have done a little bit more with the idea that there's this other legendary roving warrior who can go every bit toe-to-toe with Cohen in terms of fierceness and legendary aspect, but has had to deal with different shit because she's a woman, and also, like, does not, like, sees Cohen at the same eye level. Like, because she has the same aura of heroism, she sees through that to see what's really going on with him. I don't know, but... Mm-hmm. Or maybe she has her own set of weird problems with getting older, you know?
Like, likewise, I found it baffling that they brought Carrot up there and they kind of hinted at, whoa, hold on a second, this guy's just kind of obeying rules of the code without even knowing what they are. And, like, this wasn't, oh, thank God, maybe I'm not the last hero after all. Maybe there are still heroes out there. They just look different. No. It just gets completely forgotten.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Carrot in this book, very strange that he's here.
Yeah.
Carrot exists solely because they wanted to do the space program, and Pratchett was like, I need someone who's going to say all the normal stuff and be amazed at the space program.
Yeah, and he's like the most astronaut-shaped of them, and by that I mean he's kind of a troop.
Right, like, we need one guy to be like, wow, it's so beautiful, it's so big, you can't see borders between countries, so that Leonard can make a great joke about how, like, well, you know, we can fix that. If we started, like, growing plants in certain areas, you could, like, lay it out a bit.
You should grow forests in the shape of the name of the country so people flying overhead know what they're looking at. They should have sent a poet. Well, they sent a painter.
Yeah.
I will say...
They sent a monkey.
Accidentally.
Well, oh, I'm sorry, an orangutan. Forgive me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mea culpa.
The whole crew of the space program is very, like... They kind of mostly exist to bounce off of each other in ways that are vaguely funny. Like, Rincewind doesn't do anything. He's just there so that someone can be a snarky asshole. Carrot doesn't do anything. He's just there so someone can be serious. Mm-hmm. Leonard makes the entire thing run, but also he's there just to kind of be like, Leonard.
Yeah.
He's the goofy boffin type. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the goofy boffin type. It's more of like, here's a bunch of bits for them to do in space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone has to invent the space pen.
Yeah.
I did like the running gag in the art of the Velcro frying pan that just keeps showing up stuck on Rincewind.
Yeah, the old stick pan.
So you know good. Who I did like in this book?
Who?
I gotta give a shout out to Ponder Stibbins.
Yeah!
I enjoyed the Discworld's first STEM nerd who's having a terrible time because no one else on the entire disc is a STEM nerd.
I appreciate him so
Ponder
much.
Ponder Stibbins' finest moment. Also fun that, like, this is in 2001. The Harry Potter phenomenon has taken off by this point.
The first art of Ponder Stibbins predates Harry Potter by a year.
Really?
Yep. Wow. Yes. Yeah, fuck yeah.
It's in the L space annotations where Harry Potter is where Pratchett is like, people keep asking me, did I get the idea of the Unseen University from Harry Potter? Is Ponder Stibbins named after him? And he's just like, yes, obvious, you know, you can look up the first drawing of him, you know, in the Discworld Compendium a year before Harry Potter. Obviously I have a time machine. You'll have to ask Jack where he got his. I don't know what he has, but apparently it's similar. Stop asking.
Well, that's a good bit. That's a good answer. Is I came first, which means yes, I stole it. I have a time.
I like Ponder a lot more.
He's very good.
I like that.
He's our
Paul really did a good job of just giving him just this constantly bewildered sort of tragic expression.
Yeah, he's got his It's No Rocket. He's got his I'm a Rocket Wizard shirt, which is very good.
Yes, I am actually a Rocket Wizard.
Written in the Diablo font.
Yeah. The addition The edition I have supposedly had 16 pages of all new illustrations, and there's a really good one in the middle that's Vetinari and a bunch of the older wizards and Ponder staring at like a spell that... The luggage is also there. You get a lot of paintings of the luggage in this book. I hate that.
Most of the real ones must be because the luggage doesn't show up in my hard copy.
Oh, well, you get to see the luggage more in my copy, and it's just the worst. But there's a really good, like, Rembrandt-ass style painting of all of the wizard homies hanging out with their faces lit up by this, like, spell. And they all look like your classic, like a pack of Gandalfs or whatever, except for this one nerdy dude, and then also Vetinari, who is singularly himself. But, man, it's easy to see why people fucking like the wizards with books like this, because it's like, they don't do a lot, but they do provide local color, and the color they give us is wonderful.
Finally, one fucking nerd from inadvisably applied magic to my own heart.
I enjoyed him being mission control. I enjoyed his bits and trying to make it work. He's charming. I hope that she transitions. Go for it. You can do it.
Yeah. You know, getting everyone else out of the room so they could discuss things while he actually works. Okay, I will say. Okay, so the bit that got to me was there's a whole back and forth where Leonard is unconscious. Rincewind is trying to figure out, like, which lever to pull to make everyone not die. And they're all written backwards and or just not labeled, because Leonard is Leonardo da Vinci. And he's like, the only one I could read says Prince Harlan's Tiller. And Ponder's trying to figure out what the hell that means. And he's, like, trying to get Vetinar to stop helping, because, like, you know, I'm the engineer, leave me alone, will I think. And Vetinar is like, you know, oh, you didn't know the story of Prince Harlan's Tiller, which was a man with a who put a magical tiller on his boat that would cause it to drive itself, which is a win for the humanities nerds, but it's also what every shitty program manager I've ever had thinks happens when I mention once it might be the database, and then every time I report a problem after that they say, is it the database? And it's never the database, but they think they're helping.
I'm sorry that you read the Ponder part and immediately went, oh god, oh god, being a nerd and having a bunch of shitty bosses, this is horrifying.
And of course, the fact that he was right once just makes it worse next time.
It's not lupus, etc.
Yeah, Vetinari is the one fucking PM from Keep Your Hands Off My Music and who's actually good.
Yeah. There's a... Man, there's a gender swap casting decision. Oh, man.
God.
Yeah. Vetinari would snap. There was nothing fun about social media.
She is like a younger girl, middle school Vetinari.
Yeah.
High school, I guess. That is kind of her character. Mm-hmm. And I love her. Mm-hmm. I relate to her deeply.
A+.
God. That's so good. Other things to talk about with this book. We get a big painting of death. I liked that.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the really big paintings. Were there any that like really stood out to y'all as like the really good ones? I personally, even though most of them are comedic, I think the two that I liked the most were the one of all of them as astronauts, which was just very funny. Just a very silly image.
Yeah.
And then
Rincewind has wizards written on his helm, obviously.
Yeah. And then the other one was like the big painting of the disc from space was like actually legitimately really cool. Like it was in the book that's supposed to be about, oh wow, isn't it space majestic in certain ways? That was the one that really made me go, oh, dang, yeah, like this is actually really impressive and cool. I like this.
Yeah, it was really good. It really, like, hit what they were staring at. It's, like, very, like, okay, they, like, captured the majesty of seeing the big blue marble, except it's a disc.
Yeah.
It's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was that also. I don't know if it was an expanded edition exclusive one. They have one that was, like, oh, what if Cohen actually succeeded and ended the world? And it was, like, the disc, but, like, it's, like, got a volcano on top of four elephant skeletons on top of a turtle skeleton. That shit's metal as fuck.
That was really good, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite painting might be the one of the rim itself, where it's like there's this... We see a little bit of the circumference, which is the the fence going around the world that catches, like, salvage, but it's, like, actually getting sort of the scale of the literal actual edge of the world, like, careening off into nothing with all this, like, thunderstorms in the background and little rainbows in the haze beneath the lip. It gives a sense of scale that, like, just reading about doesn't really capture. It was so cool. That, and if we're not counting diagrams, I also just really liked the painting of all of the gods hanging out playing games with mortals.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it was, like, really, like, celebrity cameos out here. I love all these homies.
I kind of fucking hate that they forgot the lady's supposed to have bright green eyes, but that's just me being pedantic.
They draw her with green eyes in the little riff on God and Adam later, but...
She only has white eyes in the hardbound edition, at least.
Well, she was thinking really hard, and they let up when she's thinking. There's the...
Ah, okay.
That's fun.
I appreciated the bit at the end where the gods sentenced Leonard of Quirm to paint the roof of the temple... the ceiling of the Temple of Small Gods as punishment, and they're like, oh, you have to do it in 10 years or we'll burn Ankh-Morpork to the ground. And there's a whole bunch of like, you know, he has to do it alone, and God, it would take forever for him to put up all that scaffolding. And of course, the bit that he builds the fucking aerial screw and just paints it in 3 weeks.
With an airbrush.
With an airbrush. Yeah. So good.
There is one that's in the background late in the book that it's, you know, the creation of man, but it's Cohen flipping off blind Io.
Yeah, that's the one. That's so good.
That's just absolutely brilliant. It's just a background gag.
I really like the art in this. It was really good. I don't want to be too mean to Josh Kirby. Like, I am too mean to him. His art is... There's some times when it's very fun, but I really like Paul Kidby's art. It's very fun for Discworld in this specific way. Not all of it hit, but when it did hit, it was really good here.
Oh, yeah. Also, it's not really a painting, but it is a drawing. And I do, going back to talking about diagrams, I do want to bring it up. There's a map of a corner of the disc that shows geographic locations of where Ankh-Morpork and where Klatch is and where Krall is and stuff. And, like, I was simultaneously just overjoyed by this because I love me some fake-ass fantasy maps. But also, I couldn't help but think, like, oh my god, there's so many questions I have about all of the fucking... some of the geography on this map does not match up to canon. And I know because I've been reading all of the books, thank you. Why is Hersheba all the way to the east, whereas Ur and Omni are cramped right up next to the Jail River? What's up with that? Why is Klatch a mostly landlocked space? Shouldn't Hawandaland be its own separate... it's part of it, but, like, it feels too small to be a full... What's Yimituri? I have so many questions.
Oh, you don't remember that one? Oh, God. Iris forgot about Yimituri.
Get a load of this bird. It doesn't remember Yimituri.
Yeah.
I don't remember Yimituri. I'm foolish. I have so many questions. And there's all
Grace,
these
thank you for immediately... I want to pause for a second. Grace, thank you for immediately catching on to my terrible bit and just embracing it. This is the benefits you get of having both of us in the same room. We can just be awful and bully Iris, apparently.
We've been syncing up for the last week and change.
Yeah.
Why are there so many countries down on the other side of the ocean from Ankh-Morpork? But, like, in Jingo, Klatch was apparently right across the Circle Sea, to the point that we know it because that was literally the plot of the whole thing.
Yeah, there was an island smack dab in the middle that they were fighting for.
QED, Paul! Hello!
Have you considered continental drift?
I'm being annoying on purpose. This stuff doesn't
matter. What if the elephants shrugged?
I'm sure that if you messaged Pratchett about this, he would give it an answer. Well, if he was, like, if at the time you had messaged Pratchett about this, he would have given an answer that was both incredibly snarky and also a little bit like, okay, here's my actual explanation because I do care. It's charming how much he wants to be like, I don't care, but how much he does actually care a little bit.
He's the kind of nerd who cares.
I could just see something in one of the later books mentioning, like, you know, because you know someone would have pointed this out on Usenet, and he would have felt obliged to respond to it with, like, well, you know, like, what the disc version of plate tectonics, and, you know, sometimes a bunch of sea otters push the continents around, which causes a big headache for the disc cartographers.
Yep. Plus history monk meddling, plus, geographic scuffles.
Plus ratio.
They hadn't grown in all of the letters for the different countries yet, so, you know, still a work in progress.
I mean, there is a proper atlas we can look at some other time. What you're describing doesn't appear to be in the original printing, so I don't know what's up there.
I don't know
how close it is.
I do kind of want, being a map nerd and a former Geography Bee champion, I do kind of want to look at that map. The Discworld map. Maybe I'll get a copy of that.
Yeah, there's got to be that. And there's all the Science of Discworld books. I'm sure that those probably have, like, there's got to be a map in one of those.
Yeah. I've been interested obviously I'm interested in checking out all Discworld media. I've kind of been interested in reading those too, but I just didn't cover them on this show because, from what I understand, they're mostly about our real-world science at the point that they were written. And, like, I don't know how much Discworld content there would be in them to really talk about other than just, like, some casual riffing. It'd be like this book, but instead of illustrations, it would be like, so here's how evolution actually works, you know?
Well, I mean, I feel like the best thing, at some point in the future, we'll look them over, we'll read one, and we'll decide if this is going to be a bonus episode or, like, a... Oh, like, shit, we were wrong. We got to do a full episode about this. It tells the secret lore of...
I can't believe Rincewind and Ponder Stibbins make out with tongue in this one.
Yeah,
what the hell?
Oh my god. We didn't even know or something. But, like, we'll find out eventually when we read them.
It brings me no joy to propose this pairing. I'm against it personally, but, you know, I think
Ponder
all
deserves
the sweet science of Discworld.
Ponder can do so much better.
Ponder should fuck Hex.
Yeah, like I think he. I think
Ponder should transition.
Ponder should get to make
Hex
out with his robot girlfriend. Well, her robot girlfriend. Let's be
honest. I think that Hex should make Ponder wear a dress.
Yeah,
I think that Hex should start claiming that force-setting Ponder is necessary.
Yeah,
I think the teddy bear.
Like, I think Ponder would would say, like, you know, normal to wish you were a girl, and then Hex would say, you know, all things strive to grow tits.
Jesus.
All things wive.
And here I was just trying to bake up something about Hex just throwing more and more obscure errors that just require that end up forcing Ponder to transition.
Yeah, she seems to be doing a new technique called quill smashing, sir.
Look,
user does not have enough estrogen.
Look, I want to say, Cohen, I forget what it is, but Cohen refers to something, you think, like, books or whatever are sissy, but he spells it the British way, like, C-I-S-S-Y.
Yes.
Like, what are you, sis?
I feel like our podcast is a direct refutation of that statement.
We will find every single quarter of the Discworld to shove transgenderism into and do it. Mm-hmm. That is our goal. You think this is a podcast about ranking Discworld books. No, it's a podcast about making them gay and trans.
That is Stibbins. So true. Love wins.
Love Stibbins.
Anything else to talk about?
Yeah, I have some stuff I can run down, but yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, go for it. I was just going to say that I want to eat the metal plants on the moon.
Yes.
They seem
the ones that will cause you to explode a few seconds later?
Yeah, I bet that
they do. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they really call to me. I think they would fix me. They just seem exciting. I want to taste that crunchy electro leaf. Seems yummy.
I want to try it once, you know? All right.
Go ahead,
Grace. We can try it once.
Yeah,
but...
you know. We show up on Death doing, like, a Schrodinger's cat joke because it was 2001, and that was, like, the hot thing. I do love the bit where Death and his butler are talking some stuff over, and long story short, they have to bring out a Tuan's lifetimer, and it's fucking huge. It's great visual.
Of course, there's a giant one for the turtle itself.
Yeah, there's a bit where There's a bit where they make the dragons fire by putting a mirror in front of them, and apparently when a boy dragon sees another boy dragon, his instinct is to flame. I don't know if he's calling the dragons gay, but that's how I read it. there's a Casablanca reference near the end or whatever, where like Evil Harry asks the bard, like, what's your name? And he's like, I'm just a singer. And he goes, well, play it again. Like, I don't know. It's a reference to something. It's not mentioned in L-Space, but it's something. Also, Richmond gets catch 22'd.
Yeah.
He tries to get out of it by, like... And then he's like, well, it's some kind of catch. Yeah, sure is. It's a pretty good one. There's a bit where I think someone shows up and asks, like, well, how are you going to go to the bathroom in the spaceship? Which I think is mirroring a real-life thing where... I think it was LBJ while they were doing the space program, walked in, looked at it, and said, how do you boys go to the bathroom in this? And they didn't have an answer for him yet.
The whole space program is really weird, especially the parts where they're, like, building the rocket, and they just keep... It just feels like rapid fire coming up with bits there, more than it. That's the part that really goes into it, because it's just like... We put Rincewind into the spinny thing. Leonard can draw a circle.
Which was a reference to a reference to like the real Leonardo da Vinci impressed the Pope by drawing a perfect circle, according to L-Space. You can't do that with the real Pope anymore. You have to draw two circles.
Here's a funny motto. Like just constantly, here's a bit, here's a bit, here's a bit. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we could actually start the plot.
Yeah, like... He had, like, a checklist of space program jokes to make. Like, they do make a 2001 reference where there's, you know, he said, my God, it's full of elephants. There is a, you know, they have to plant the flag on the moon, and Ventanari's like, that's weird, okay.
Yeah.
they have to tell the orangutan bumps his head, and they have to say, you have to take small steps, not giant leaps.
Yeah.
It's like,
I think the whole, like, thing with like, oh, we have too much weight and we're losing too much air thing. I have to assume that was an Apollo 13 reference.
A lot of this is
frantically,
yes.
Yeah, cobble together a solution from Mission Control. Yeah, it was very, very much. We haven't done space yet in the Discworld. Maybe Terry was like, I don't know if I'll ever have a book that I'll have a full reason to do that, since that's not the direction we're veering in for Discworld. But if we're doing like an old school road trip, then hey. Perfect excuse.
It's a sky trip.
Yeah,
I'd like to point out also that we've gone this entire podcast and we have not talked basically at all about the Silver Horde, which should tell you about our opinion of them.
Yeah, they're doing their thing. I enjoyed how they talked with the bard, but that was about it.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what if they were barbarians, but get this shit, they were old.
Yeah. Now,
wow.
What if we already had like three books of that?
Think about the comedic potential of this. Wow.
They really just are kind of there, and occasionally they're funny. The scene where they're all dressing up as gods was pretty good.
Yeah.
But like, none of the jokes really stuck. They just kind of like, okay, that's a joke.
Yeah.
Cohen's got character and some good bits, and there's stuff to talk about, but the rest of them are just kind of there.
Yeah, like, Cohen's surprisingly thoughtful.
I liked Dark Lord Harry, but he's not really a member of the Horde, he's just there as a hanger-on.
Yeah, he's there as the villain who's doing a face turn for a little bit and then betrays them, obviously, you know, classic.
But he has an interesting thing going on. The rest of them are just kind of like, well, they barely have distinguishing characteristics. Yeah. I had trouble remembering which one was which.
Yeah, you have Cohen, the other ones, and Hamish, who's sleepy and in a wheelchair.
Yep. Truckle the Uncivil thinks that it's funny to laugh at, like, boob jokes and stuff. Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's right.
There's Wee Mad Hamish, who's just a guy.
Mm-hmm.
There's Old Billy, or possibly Old Benji, I think. No, it's Billy. And he's another guy who's there. And
I don't remember any of them. Yeah, I just remember the assorted guys.
There must have been another one.
Jokes with.
Yeah. There's probably another one. I forget. Mm. Vera was there. She was the only girl. She was very cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They just kind of exist, and then they blow up.
Yeah.
Like, they have their moments. Like, I enjoyed Cohen. Like, it was, thought it was funny because the whole reason they kidnap this random bard or minstrel or whatever so that he could tell the story and immortalize them in an epic poem. And they keep like doing cool shit and then like hey, did you get that down? Write that part down. Remember that I did that and then I said that.
Yeah.
Or yeah.
I do love them talking about like a previous battle that they took part in earlier in mm-hmm. their career where somebody was making a tapestry out of it and they had to keep setting the fights back up and doing them again because she kept making errors in the weaving. That was a good bit.
He's like, you can't have media on the battlefield.
There's some good bits on the whole. It's just that like they're just kind of weird guys who exist as weird guys that don't have any characterization.
Yeah.
They're not as exciting as we sent Rincewind into space. The problem.
Which Discworld book is this? I need to make a in Fast and the Furious 9 they go to space joke.
I don't even know. We're pretty far.
I think
in
this
is
20. Wait, 26? Where's the Discovery?
I think it's 23, actually. I was just looking at it.
No, it's 27. We've read a lot of
27. 20, okay, there we go.
Yeah, 26 is Thief of Time, 27 is this. We're nearly at our 3-quarter mark for the series, which is nuts.
In Discworld 27, they go to space.
Yeah.
Good joke, Every Pony. Good work.
It was just a good, fun book.
Yeah,
it had good art. It's pretty.
Yeah.
I recommend taking a look at this one because even if you're like, this book was nothing, go find it at your local library and look at the funny pictures.
Yeah. I would also say, like, if this is your first time getting into Discworld, this book actually might be, like, especially if you're like, I don't know, like you're a younger reader or like somebody who's really like, I don't really give a shit about fantasy. Fuck that shit. This is dumb. This might be a good start because it's a low obligation. It's full of cool art and maybe it'll get you interested in being like, okay, so why the fuck is there an orangutan there? Who's this like jarhead looking guy?
Also, why? Theoretical listener who doesn't like fantasy. Why are you here?
I mean, maybe there's somebody out there who's like, well, I like reading funny things, and I hear there's a lot of buzz around about this Discworld thing. Now, I don't like fantasy, though, but I feel like I'd be missing out. I'm describing, like, a really kind of pathetic person. I don't know.
Listener, if you're pathetic, email us.
If you're like a pathetic little meow meow, maybe this book is for you. Maybe you're Rincewind. I don't know.
We were talking before this, like, we've known some Rincewind defenders, but there can't be that many Cohen defenders, right?
Well, we didn't say defenders, specifically, like...
appreciators.
Can you imagine a guy whose Cohen is his favorite Discworld character?
Yeah, imagine, like, a guy who feels the need to stick up for Cohen the Barbarian.
That's his favorite guy, and he's like, you can't be bad-mouthing.
That's my emotional support, rapist.
I feel like that's a dude who votes Tory. I'm not even British, and I don't even know entirely what that means, but I feel like I'm right.
I enjoyed Cohen's character in this a lot. I just can't imagine the guy who's like, he's my favorite guy. I'm so glad he's back from interesting times.
Okay, maybe if you like started reading these and like when they came out and like you started reading them like when parodies of Conan the Barbarian were like fresh and relevant.
Maybe.
Anyways.
Okay.
If he was a cat boy, he'd be Conan the Barbarian.
Holy fucking shit. Let's go. Do we have any other things we wanted to talk about, or do we want to turn it over to the ranking?
There was a weird joke near the start about a transvestite washroom that I'm not sure what to make of, but at that point I'm just grasping at straws, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was a lie.
That was weird.
Thanks, Derek.
Anyways, so like, I don't know how to say, except that
was in there with the describing incompetent henchmen.
Yeah, yeah.
The incompetent henchman bit was, it went on for too long, but it was, like, you could tell Pratchett was really enjoying just, like, all right, I've come up with the five dumbest guys imaginable, and I want to tell you about them. It's a real, like, hey, look at my weird dudes.
Yeah.
I did find the joke of Cohen being like, wow, that is impressive. It is hard to find a really, really stupid dude.
Yeah, it's...
You did it. That is the... dumbest dwarf I've ever met.
It's very
That's
good.
That's impressive, but you can't find a dumb dwarf.
It's good, and you have to remember that in 2001, these like sort of evil overlord list type jokes were a lot funnier, and they still
absolutely.
Hold up. Like
those were, that was very, around 2000-ish, but I do want to make the side fridge joke here that remember how trolls get way smarter when it's cold?
Yeah.
And that's me was still that thick.
Jesus Christ.
This is a very, just very stupid bit. And he drew them all. He did little pictures of every single one of these weird guys who immediately died.
I hope you enjoy our trip to Discworld's Guy Museum.
You know, it is. That's really all I wanted was a guy museum.
It is a little weird that, like, Ogborpork is fantasy the United States in this and not fantasy London for, like, a book. Because they have to have the space program.
Yeah, well, it's like fantasy. Yeah, they do have a space program. I don't know. It's the stand-in for whatever Terry needs it to be, I guess.
Yeah, you notice how they mentioned that every nation in the world was panicking about this, but we never got a single peep from anyone else?
Yeah.
Nobody else decided to build a spaceship. Yeah.
They might have.
Yeah, it would have been really... Yeah, like, we get a bit with everyone gathering in the Temple of Small Gods to pray about it, because the other Red Cully won't be upstaged by his fucking brother.
Actually, you know what would be a great way to, like, make interesting time suck slightly less? Have Rincewind's rocket, like, fail and land outside, and then a much better rocket lands in the city, and Two Flower steps out. That, it's like, you need to stop! Oh, hey, Rincewind, what are you doing here?
That would have been pretty good.
Yeah, like, that would have been a pretty good bit. Turns out now that the weird British dude is gone, they're doing fine.
Anyone from any other country, like, shows up and, like, they all have their own spaceship and it's not falling apart because it wasn't built by, you know, it wasn't built by a bunch of shitty wizards and Leonardo da Vinci.
I want an even shittier spaceship built by shittier wizards. I want Bill Rincewind from 4X to come back.
Yeah! I would accept that.
That would
it's
be
made out of corrugated
thing.
Tin.
Just like a bunch of every nation on the disc sending its worst students.
Yeah, they all decided to do their own space program independently. I would love that.
We're literally inventing the Discworld International Space Station, y'all.
Okay, and they all ram into each other in space, glom together into one international space station, then work from there.
They all got stuck together and couldn't get down.
Yeah, like, what? There's, like, a giant liquor barrel sticking out of the side. Like, part of it's just made out of gold.
Here's how we figure this, gentlemen. We all go back home and tell everyone that we meant to do this.
I hope you've enjoyed Discworld Fanfic Pitch Hour.
We do this every time. Yeah, it's becoming a segment. We enjoy it.
That's the problem with Discworld. We've hit the point where you're deep enough into the world that it's like, well, I have all these fun ideas.
Yeah, we're the end result of reading this much Discworld is that a little piece of it lives inside of you, and you can just go there whenever. That's fun.
I'm entering my mind unseen university. I'm yelling at my mind bursar as we speak.
I like to picture my psychic landscape a lot like Lankra. It's small, sparsely populated, mountainous, probably some, like, goats and stuff there. There's witches, very cool witches. And now the joke is over. Anyways, ranking... Thanks. I don't know where I was going with it. I'm probably going to cut
it.
It
was a good bit. I just didn't know how to follow it up. It was a good bit.
No, it wasn't. Anyways.
No, I liked it.
Ranking. Okay. Where do we put this? So here it is. I think this is going to be better than Interesting Times. I'm just going to say that.
Well, yes. I mean, yeah, compared... Daring with Faith Praise.
Let's skip up to 20.
Right at the middle.
Yeah.
Is it better than more?
I think...
Well...
I think it's more. I think I enjoyed it more than The Last Continent, but only because it was shorter. And I didn't dislike The Last Continent. It's my favorite Rincewind book, but
I think I like this more.
I like
than
this
last
one had pictures.
On its own, I think I would have not said, but with the pictures, definitely I'd put it above The Last Continent.
I'd also put it above Soul Music. It's also, like, tighter, which is nice.
Yeah, it's tight. It's easy to read. It's got some good moments, and the pictures are great.
Yeah.
I
how about this?
Think it, I would be fine putting it above Soul Music, but below Mort, because Mort has some like real depth to it that this obviously lacks.
I don't think it's better than Guards Guards.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Right above Soul Music then?
Yeah, 14
sounds
good.
We really
are
just slamming it right in the middle.
It feels
that sounds about right.
Yeah, like I feel like it's better than half, but like you gotta admit that like, you know, that's still pretty good. Like the half, like
I look at every book on the top half and I'm like, yeah, I liked all of these
books. Yeah, like those are all better books is the pro like you have to admit, like we have to kinda grade on a curve here. Like, yes, the you know, the 14th best Discworld book is still pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a curve that we spent a lot of time building, so I'm fine to agree.
I'm not angry. I'm not saying that it's the wrong place. It's just very funny that we put it directly in the middle.
Good job, us. We made a good.
We split the baby. We're the King Solomon's discoverers.
That's true. Hey, yeah, there was a whole plot about the Gordian knot in this, and they mentioned it twice, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a thing at the end of the book. And sure enough, there it was.
Yeah, he cuts a D6 in half.
Yeah, they did the Terry did the narrative thing of like, if you have an important plot point, remember to coming up, remember to mention it twice beforehand, so that readers won't forget about it.
I did enjoy Cohen immediately being like, "Hey, this looks like it could be a naughty situation.
Yeah.
Make sure you write that down. Remember that I said that. Remember,
it's very good.
Yeah, that's great. Anyways." This has been Discoverers. You've been listening to our episode on The Last Hero. We actually made it to an hour. I thought that this episode wasn't going to make it to an hour.
Yeah, I would have put money on us not getting this far.
Yeah. Well, man, Sue, I like hanging out with y'all, so I'll shoot the shit and, you know, bullshit for however long we can. Next episode is going to be The Amazing Maurice and His Educated Rodents, Terry's first young adult venture. One that got a movie adaptation, which I haven't seen yet, so maybe we'll watch that for a bonus ep or something.
That'd be fun.
And, because the book itself is not that long, so we can get through that pretty fast. But then the book after that is Night Watch, so we're gonna be spending some fucking time with that one.
Oh, fuck. I am so excited.
Like, it's Night Watch, and then I think it's, like, The Wee Free Men, and then I think, like, after that might be, like, Going Postal. And like, this is like we're reaching the peak here. It's the air is rare up here, so
I am for that. Very excited to make everyone listen to me talk about Night Watch for 3 hours.
Hell yeah!
I'm excited for Grace to read Going Postal and inadvertently discover a new type of gender.
I'm excited.
Oh God, you're going to have.
I don't want to like blow smoke up your ass too much, but like, I think you're gonna like what you see.
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to meet this guy I've been kin assigned.
So it's not Going Postal. It's Night Watch, then The Wee Free Men, then Monstrous Regiment. Then another
right!
Tiki Awakening, and then Going Postal.
We actually got a request for a somebody actually writing in to request to be a guest host on Monstrous Regiment, which I'll talk to you folks about later. But I am intrigued.
Monstrous Regiment's another favorite. I mean, like, Night Watch and Monstrous Regiment are probably, and Going Postal are like three of my favorite Discworld books, period. So it'll be fun to read those interspersed with random Tiffany Aching, which I haven't read before.
Yeah. Plus, Thud is after that. And then kind of the denouement of the Discworld. But we can enjoy things while we can.
Yeah.
So look forward to that, dear listeners. My name is Iris J. You can find me online at irisj.net or IrisJ Comics with your various classes of social media. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on Mastodon at mellify.men. God willing and the creek don't rise, if co-host hasn't gone under by the time this episode gets out, I'm still on co-host. I am coming out with a new comic on Filthy Figments very soon called Knee Jerk. It's about being horny in the hospital. And you can read it if you subscribe there. I've also got a comic called Wedlocked, which is coming out on Slipshine, that I forget if that'll be out by the time this episode goes out. It'll probably be out just generally soon. And that's about a dysfunctional poly triad made up of trans men who all work in the wedding industry. And that's also going to be real fun. My thing that I'm going to recommend is... let's see. You know what? I haven't recommended a food thing in a while. I'm going to recommend... So, here in Washington, I don't know if this is a national thing, but up here in Washington, we have this brand of Greek yogurt called Zoi Greek Yogurt. And they do, like, a fruit flavor where it's, like, little bits of fruit mixed in with the Greek yogurt. I'm not really a regular yogurt-type person. I gotta have a little bit of sour in my yogurt in the morning. Their fruit Greek yogurt is... It's like candy. It's so good. I think the lemon is probably my favorite. Lemon yogurt and, like, maybe cut it with a little bit of plain yogurt plus some granola and some, like, raisins or something. That is a fantastic breakfast. Go check it out.
Hell yeah.
I am still Belina. I'm still easiest to find in the show notes because I never know when where things are going to be. If I'm going to plug something, you know what? Before I fell down some of these other holes, I was trying a game called Palia recently. It's sort of like what if we made something like Harvest Moon, made it actually work as an MMO. Where it's like it's got a lot of, okay, I know everyone's tired of saying this, but there's a good deal of Breath of the Wild in that, you know, the way you navigate around the world, mm-hmm. but there's no real combat. There's hunting, but that's just, you know, chasing after critters. But what actually makes this game special is the fact that it concentrates almost entirely on its character writing.
Ooh.
It is about going out. It is about meeting everybody in the town, seeing how everybody interacts. It's actually really heartfelt and actually really good and surprisingly very casually queer.
Oh, like, that's cool.
Like, textually so. Like, one character talks about his two dads. The big beefy blacksmith lady talks about her wife. The fact that she has a son is its own question, but I think that's more because she is also very loud about how she would fuck just about anything when she was still an adventurer. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more that she had a son than settle down with her wife.
Aww.
But mm-hmm. like it's like Love every wins. Yeah, no, it's actually really it's very special as what it is. It's currently free to play. They're going to be launching on Steam about the time that this episode comes out. So again, the name is Palia. Hell, I'd put my own referral code in the show notes. I'll get that for you before later.
Yeah, please do. I'll put it into the notes for our listening audience.
I have been the internet's beloved Princess Grace. You can find my writing, programs, podcast posts, and everything else is fit to plug at princess.software. Belina, dear, we're moving out.
I'm over here.
Yeah, I know. You already went. That's the problem. And the thing I'm going to recommend is they finally fixed my internet after 6 months, so I'm going to recommend Team Fortress 2, God's Perfect FPS that I can now play again. Yeehaw, still good.
Let's fucking go, gamers!
The day they fixed it, I went on TF2 and had, like, the best game I've had in quite some time, because I had a reasonable ping for once, because I'm not going over my damn cell phone.
Oh my god, we need good to play video some game. Time.
Yeah!
I gotta reinstall.
I have been, as always, Juniper. You can find me online, Juniper Theory on co-host, anywhere else. Just find me. Good luck. I'm wonderful and hot, and therefore it shouldn't be too hard to find me because I'm perfect.
Wise.
Thing I'm going to recommend, a few days ago I was like, I really want to play this video game, and I know Belina's obsessed with it. Hey, Belina, want to listen to me rant at you about Void Stranger for the next week?
God, it's been so good.
So I then... tried out Void Stranger. It's exactly as good as I wanted it to be. It's absolutely incredible. It is a very mean game that is very easy to get stuck in cruel ways and waste lots of time in. And I recommend if you're going to play it, find someone else who's a pervert about it, who you can go, hey, am I doing this completely wrong and wasting the next 2 hours of my life? So that they can go, yeah, don't do that. Because... you're going to do that. That's going to happen. It's one of those kinds of games. But if you can find that, god damn, this game is good. Oh, the puzzles in this are awesome. I just hit one of the big moments of like, oh, I've changed the way the entire game works. Everything about it is different now. This is incredible. And I'm very excited.
Very cool, very cool. A lot of good game recs this episode. But yeah, join us next time. One last little note I wanted to mention before we log off. Not to date when this actually comes out, but the day we're recording this, March 12th, is actually the, I believe it is the 9th anniversary of Pratchett's passing.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, literally today. So thank you so much for having, essentially writing the series that touched so many lives and also got us together to make this cool show.
Yeah, like, it's obvious to say that we wouldn't be here right now without him, but I absolutely would not be the woman I am without these stories.
Oh, yeah. We would probably find a reason to make a podcast about something, but the Discworld series definitely shaped my life in a not insignificant way. So, yeah. Thanks, man.
Big fan, Derek.
Until next time, folks.
Truly, they were the last hero.
They truly were the last hero. Keep on discing, everybody. See you next time. Or
follow your dreams.
Listen to you. You hear us next time. We won't see you or hear you. That would be weird. We can't see you or hear you.
Unless you write in, I guess.
Unless you write in. So we can hear and see you.
Oh, disc at hypnovire.us or discpod on social media. Hit us up. Leave us your comments and stuff. Anyways, have a good night. Goodbye.
Bye. Follow your dreams.
So long, everybody.
Good shit.